Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Soul becomes Brahman. There's no harm in accepting figuratively that when the soul becomes liberated, it becomes Brahman. That is, when the false identification with matter ceases, the soul identifies with spirit. But the person situated in Brahman must necessarily differentiate in the state between the experience, and the experience. Is there a difference in saying that? It means you have the says between the experience, the experienced, and the experience.
I think it should be the experiencer.
The experiencer.
And then the experience.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
It's, I think it's just subject, object, and then, you know.
And probably experience just stays the same way, kind of. Yeah? Okay. But the person who is experiencing the experience is still the experience?
Experiencer.
Okay, so we just have to put a, it's just missing an R.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Experience E,
the experiencer, and the experienced. Or just the experienced. Okay. So then he's Bhaktivinoda Thakura, this is still all Bhaktivinoda Thakura, right?
He's
pointing out here that it's not a problem that you're saying that the soul becomes Brahman. But that's only in the way, one is that he never was not Brahman. It's not that he becomes Brahman. Just like God doesn't become God. You know, he always is. So the soul always is Brahman. He doesn't become Brahman. But by saying that one becomes Brahman, then you're acknowledging that his consciousness is that he understands that he is Brahman. So that time you'd say, now he's Brahman. Right? You know, just like, let us say, you have a group of adults, right? And then you have a smaller child. And the adults have their way of saying things, that they're talking adult stuff, but they use language that the kids won't know what they're talking about. But at the same time, it doesn't sound like a weird conversation, so they get inquisitive. Right? Right. So then one day the kid is there, and this adults start talking what they're talking. Right? And then he goes, oh, you mean this? And then all the adults laugh, and then they say, oh, he's growing up. Right? You understand? But he's exactly the same age he was before that conversation started. Right? So it's simply that the perception changed, the consciousness changed. So therefore, that also is included in the identity. Right? In other words, the soul is Brahman, but it doesn't act like it. Right? So that's the point, is the consciousness. So when the soul starts acting as Brahman, then you can identify him as Brahman. But the difference is that the proper understanding of Brahman is that even though the soul is Brahman, still he's the small particle Brahman and God's the unlimited Brahman. And so there's always that interaction between the living entity, God, and you know, how you say, yeah, the interaction with the experience. Does that make sense? So as long as it maintains that, it's not a problem that the soul becomes Brahman. Like that. Does that make sense? Because these are all terminologies we can use. They're technically correct, though we may not emphasize them, because we're looking more at the pastime element rather than the simply the situation element. Right? Liberation as the goal. Liberation is defined as the cessation of material illusion for the conscious soul. It is a momentary action. The eternally realized persons, nityasiddha, cannot accept liberation as a goal because they were never conditioned. There are two types of jivas, that which will be discussed when talking about pure knowledge. It cannot be said that liberation is the goal of all the souls because it does not apply to the eternally liberated souls. But prema is applicable for all souls and therefore it should be designated the goal. Right? So prayojana is prema, not liberation. Liberation is simply the situation in which you express prema. It can't be a goal because it's just a situation. Does that make sense? Because the situation has to be an experience, it has to be the interaction, those things. It has to be dynamic. Right? But here, just to label just the position, then that's not enough. That's sambandha. Right? Sambandha is the position. But prayojana is the actual, the experience, based on the interaction. Right? So he says here, it's just a moment. It's a momentary action. It means the moment that one goes from being conditioned into not being conditioned. But that moment is just that simply now you've situated yourself there, and then someone continues performing his devotional activities. Right? So all it is a moment, and then one's not connected with the material, and now one's connected with the spiritual. Right? So it can't be a goal. That's why for the impersonalists, then it doesn't last, because even though they make it a goal, when they get there, it's only a situation. Now, what do you do in this situation?
Go back to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. It would be like, let's say, you're out in the park, you're playing around, and you're interacting, but, you know, you're getting some trouble, and people are harassing, and, you know, you tripped and scraped your knee, and stuff like that. So you think, oh, no, I want to get out of this, right? So, you know, you see a restaurant or something. Says, okay, let's go there. Right, so we're out of the park, we're out of that, you're sitting in the restaurant, but you're not doing anything in the restaurant. You're not ordering, you're not eating, you're not using the bathroom. You know, you're just sitting there. So what's going to happen? You're going to get bored and go back out into the park. You know, you think of a new plan. You know, okay, I'll be more careful, I won't fall over. I'll play on the other side where all the, you know, crazy people are. Does that make sense? So that's what Vermont liberation can't be a goal. Because it's just, all liberation is getting out of the negative, but it's not positive, right? Devotional service is positive, therefore it can't be a goal. The goal has to be positive.
Like that.
Yes?
So that's why the moksha from karmakanda is not complete knowledge.
Moksha from karmakanda?
Yeah, this is dharmartha kama moksha. So that's not complete knowledge.
Oh, dharmartha kama moksha, no. No, because you don't know about the fifth, about devotional service, prema. Like, prema is the fifth. That's the actual goal. These others are temporary goals, but the problem is they're temporary. You do dharma for so long, but then you want to get the results. You get the results, you want to enjoy the results. From enjoying the results, then you want to be liberated from the entanglement coming from enjoying the results. Then, getting liberated, then you get bored. Now you want to do something. So, because you're a purified soul, right? You're falling from Brahman, you have no, you know, conditioning, therefore you'll fall back into dharma and start doing your nice activities. Right? And it'll just keep going around and around.
So this love of body is the fifth one?
Yes, this is the fifth. Yes?
After we achieve a goal, it becomes part of sambandha.
Yes, but it becomes part of the prajumna part of sambandha, not the shankarshan. But the goal here just becomes part of shankarshan because there is no rasa then.
So that's demonstrated.
Yeah, because then for the living entities in the spiritual world, it is part of sambandha, but it's the prajumna aspect. And that it's now they're within the spiritual world, and so in the spiritual world, they're inspired to do things to please Krishna. You know, in other words, to express that love. But if it's just facts, it's sankarshan. So that aspect of sambandha is non-interactive. That's because the soul is interactive. The soul isn't masculine. So the masculine can function just in Sankarshan. But the energy has to function within Prajumna, Adiyud, and Vasudeva. But that has to be done in a situation, therefore dependence.
So when it becomes part of Prajumna, the goal is just pleasing Krishna?
Yes. It's just expressing that prema for Krishna, but now your situation is better. See, because technically for the devotee, he's liberated now. So he already is situated in Brahman. So that's why it's not really, you know, there's no hoop-de-doo about this one. It's just, you're already situated in Brahman. It's just the quality of ingredients you have. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you're already doing exactly the same work. They're pleased with you, so they move you from where, at one of those little cubicles into an office. You'll do exactly the same work. It's just better facility. God without energies. The Advaitavadis maintain that Brahman is without variety or energies or powers. Though it is said that Brahman is without variety or differentiation, that is said only to distinguish it from the variety experienced within material objects. Variety is a quality of Brahman. Right? So in other words, they're saying that Brahman has no variety just to distinguish it from the material world and its variety. But otherwise, as soon as they say Brahman is eternal, okay, that's one thing. Then they say it's unlimited. They say it's indivisible. You know, it's ananda. These are all varieties. But all it is, but they don't catch that, right? A little dull here, right? But the point is that the main point is when Shastras say it's without, means it's without the mundane. Right? Yeah. If Brahman has no energies or power, from whence came the created world or the illusion of a world? Because in any way they cut it, somehow or another it's got to connect back to Brahman. Whether Brahman is transformed or there's just illusion, and Brahman didn't transform it, but it had to come from somewhere. Otherwise, then right there, your philosophy of Advaita is finished. So it has to somehow or another come from Brahman. So just that Brahman could create such a thing means that there's varieties. Right? Does that make sense? It can't just happen. You can say, no, but it's by chance. But something that can happen by chance is only that which is possible. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a lottery. By chance, you win the lottery. But that's because you're following the rules within the lottery system. You're just a Joe walking down the street and you don't have a ticket to that lottery, you will not win it. You know? So this idea is just by chance. No, but something can only happen that has some meaning, that has some connection, that's according to the laws already established. So that means, even if you say that the illusion is just happening, but the point is why does it always happen in the same way? Why can the Shastras define exactly how the illusion will function? Because it follows laws. Where did the laws come from? Illusion doesn't create the laws. Because the illusion is controlled by the laws. Right? So that means Brahman has to create it. Right? And so then, you either have Brahman transformed, and then you just worry about the one, but if then they say, no, but how can he transform? Then they get into detail. Okay, that part of Brahman that is avidya can create, but the part that is vidya doesn't. That's Ishwara Brahman. But then now you're having two kinds of Brahman. So either, you know, we have a schizophrenic Brahman here, or Brahman has variety. You know? But the point is that Brahman is never under ignorance, therefore it's the energy. So that's the problem. Because they're so hooked on the one, they can't explain it so them. Though nothing except Brahman exists according to their philosophy, one is forced to conclude that some power of Brahman is the cause of the world or cause of the illusion of the world. Right? So whichever way you cut it, whether you say that is the world is there, but it's illusory how we want to enjoy it, or it's not there. Either way, any kind of Brahma, any kind of Mayavadi, still the problem comes is there has to be a power. Otherwise, where does the illusion get the power to control Brahman. Right? You can only control something through power. Here, the refutation of Dvaitavad must conclude, because other works are at hand. It should only be noted that the fourth stage of knowledge, Brahmagyan, is a distorted form of knowledge of God. The third stage is the seed of real knowledge. Persons such as Shankaracharya, Astavakra, Dattatreya, Nanak, Kabir Gorakshanath, and Shiva Narayana preach the fourth stage of knowledge. Pure knowledge which arises from knowledge of God has no relation to Advaitavada. And here, what is this fourth stages?
The third one he's talking about is theistic moralism, and the fourth is the impersonal.
Oh, okay. Okay, so from the third, you get the seed of real knowledge, which then takes you to the fifth,
yeah.
Right? And gives the fourth in a proper balance light.
Yes.
So they're just functioning on that fourth without actually reference to the third. So then that means then the four stages on the material platform is necessarily atheistic.
Yeah. It's like a pseudo-theistic. They claim we're worshiping God as the one.
Okay.
So it's a personal conception. Whereas the third still has the potential of becoming personal.
It means, in other words, if Prayojan is the goal, then from the third stage, then you pass through liberation to the fourth to get in the fifth. But if you're taking it as the fifth, then the problem, they even compromise religion.
Mm-hmm.
Depends. Some of them do it properly, but most of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless they're a properly functioning, member of the Vedic society, doing their duties, and then through their duties of Naishkarmya, they're going for liberation, then they're not even situated on the third.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It seems that according to the example here, this Mayavadi philosophy has been preached since time immemorial.
It's always been there, because Dattatreya goes back a ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, seeing that Dattatreya's parents are basically, I think his father is a son of Brahma, and his mother is a granddaughter of Brahma. You know, so, yeah, you'd have to say that it goes back a long way. And the four Kumaras are Brahma bodies.
Yeah. So it means that Shankaracharya put in a certain style in order to...
He just took that and used it as a basis to for a Vedic explanation of Buddhism. So Buddhism also will be a form of Advaitavada, just less detailed than the Brahmavada that would be naturally present. And so all it is he's kept the same philosophy so that sikhas like this. Let's say I want to be efficient, okay? And my duty is, people were following the Vedas but misapplying it because they were violent. Okay, so now I want them to follow the Vedas, but the problem is their interpretation of the Vedas is violently applied. So therefore, I have to make them non-violent. So what do I have to do? I have to say, forget about the Vedas,
yes.
Worry about non-violence, okay? Now, once they are now established that non-violence is standard and is pretty well established, now I can turn them back to the Vedas. But now if I turn them all away from the Vedas by just throwing them out, because then there's nothing to compare with, right? Nothing is pretty straightforward. And now if I want to switch them all back, then the easiest is just adjust the culture. Leave the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So all it is now you're defining everything according to the Vedic, following the Vedic rituals instead of the Buddhistic, but your philosophy is still exactly the same. Right? Then the Vaishnavacharyas come and change the philosophy. Does that make sense? So it's just you're taking one step at a time.
So Buddha changed the culture, and then Sankaracharya just used the same philosophy to
change the culture back.
Right.
Yeah. Because basically, you can look at it, these smartas, because that would be the ones doing the animal sacrifice, so basically they're already impersonalists. So to switch, they're not changing them from pure Vaishnavism into Buddhism. You're changing them already from impersonal, but badly applied. So now it's violent. So then you just switch them to a peaceful form, and that's Buddhism. Right? Because then it's not that the Vedic is not peaceful. They're more peaceful because they don't have all these other trappings. But the difficulty comes is that because if they have the Veda, they'll still misapply it. Therefore, you just switch, right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's just like what happened with you had the Buddhists, right? And then those Buddhists that came in contact with the Bengali tantrics, right? Then a portion of them, or however many of them, became Sahajayan. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So they just changed that. Then when they came in contact now with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then they kept the same philosophy, changed the culture again. Right? So in other words, they're Buddhists all the way through, basically. So that's the easier. Does that make sense?
Back when you're talking about Brahmavadis, do they generally have the philosophy of Brahma Parinama?
Basically, it's just it's all Brahman. So even there's not a need, from what I understand, we'll see later, it's coming up, that it's the understanding of Brahman, that there's no need of transformation, it's just all Brahman. So since you're looking at just Brahman, it doesn't matter if it's transformed or not, or if it's in the form of a tree or a rock, you know, it's just, it's all Brahman anyway. Because the point is that if illusion is transformation of Brahman, technically it's still Brahman, since there only is Brahman. And if the jiva is also Brahman, so that means it still is Brahman. Yes?
Then there's that pastime of Lord Brahma requesting the Kumaras to procreate, and they refuse, saying we don't want to be in Maya, in illusion, you know, in household life, we just want to be Brahmacharis.
Yeah, because in there you might, by getting so absorbed in all the activities, get distracted from your viewpoint of seeing everything as Brahman. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, in other words, for that kind of mentality, then the Brahmachari situation is always easier. Not that it can't be done as a Grihastha.
Yeah.
Because I think Kashyapa was a
yes.
Brahmavadi. You know, like that. But it just makes it more difficult. But then even there, they're Prajapatis. Mm-hmm. So they're above. They don't see the world as opportunities for sense gratification. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that there's that element of the elements that you function in a nice karma just work are connected with householder life. That's the Prajapatis. Mm-hmm. So that's your, what is it? Maharloka. Mm-hmm. Right, when you're not dealing with that, then it moves up to the, you know, tapa, you know, how you say? Jana tapa, you know, if it's austerities or yajnas or, you know, like that kind of thing. And then satya is more like yoga. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, so those three, they're all called satyaloka because there is the element of that, they're not looking at the material world as opportunities for enjoying the senses. Like the result of dealing with the material world is not that. The result is for something higher. Mm-hmm. You engage the senses. So they're following that path of Naishkarmya. Mm-hmm. That's why they're in their own category.
Right.
Even though they're Grihasthas. Mm-hmm. But they're... Mm-hmm. Okay. So now Tattva Vivek, Dvitiyanu Bhava, second realization. Text 1, Satchidananda Sandarangam Parananda Adasa Shrayam Chid Achij Chakti Sampannam Tam Vande Kali Pavanam. To Lord Chaitanya, whose transcendental form is filled with eternity, knowledge, and bliss, who is the shelter of transcendental nectar and bliss, who is the master of all spiritual and material potencies, and who is the purifier of the Kali Yuga, I offer my respectful obeisances. Sarupam ashtito yatma swarupa shakti vridita varadyeva nijatmanam upadhi rahitam vachah. When he is situated in his original nature, by his own power, the soul gives the correct answers to these spiritual questions. Answers free from the touch of matter. Right? So now, when the soul is actually on the liberated platform, then he has the actual proper answers, just from his own potency. Right? Because he is a potency. So there is the chit shakti. He is a small part. So from that, he is able to understand things as they are. Right? That doesn't mean that he fully understands God and all that. That's by God's grace. Right? And that he's able to function on this position is also by God's grace. But the point is inherently he has this knowledge. So it's this knowledge that is being perverted in the material world. This knowledge is what in the spiritual world is directly that light, that knowledge. Material world is that knowledge is then like shining through colored glass. So depending upon the modes and the particular combinations, you get all kinds of different patterns. Does that make sense? So then they come up with so many ideas of what is spiritual when it's not actual. Does that make sense? Yeah. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Influenced by matter in different ways, the soul is imprisoned in the material world. Give a great variety of answers to the questions posed in the second verse of the first chapter of this birth. And that was which one?
He's going to review. Oh,
he's going to review. Yeah. Those souls who by spiritual realization and by understanding of the teachings of a genuine master know the truth about the soul and give the correct answers to these questions. These questions have each only one correct answer, right? It's not, these are not trick questions, right? It means for the jivas, conditioned jivas, they turn into trick questions, or they try to trick people with their answers. But they're not trick, they're just straightforward questions and answers. The three questions posed in the first chapter, second verse of this book are one, I perceive this world, who am I? Right? Because if I'm perceiving the world, then we have to be different from the world. Two, what is the immense material world? Right? So in other words, I'm perceiving the world, so who am I? And then what is this that I'm perceiving? And three, what relation have I with this world? Right? The soul is influenced by the material nature, give a great variety of answers to these questions. Answers recounted in the first chapter of this book. Right? So that's why simply by the philosophy you can understand is by answering these. So that's why you give. What is a particular philosophy's or religion's definition of the soul and of the material world? Like that. Does that make sense? And then you're going to have to give the origin. Right? So then God. Then there's Sabandhagyan. So just simply that you can understand the whole philosophy. You don't need to know all the ancients of it and this and that and all the rituals and other things. Just this much, that's what we're saying. Half a page, you can know any philosophy, any religion. The difficulty is whether that philosophy or religion on their own can give you that half page. Much of the time is that the Vaishnava would have to go into theirs and sift through it to find out what they should be giving you the answer. But it's because it's not necessarily that they can. You know, it's even like Prabhupada was being visited by, I think, this big, big scholar, by a well-known scholar, Sanskrit scholar, and, you know, like this. So he asked him, who is God? Oh, this is very difficult, you know, so many study this, and it's still unclear, and this and that. And after he said all this, Prabhupada turned to an 8-year-old kid who was sitting there. Who is God? He says, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he looked back at the pundit and said, see, not so difficult. What do you mean it's difficult? Like that, you know. It's just, so that's the problem. It's because of their conditioning. Then they give a variety of answers to this. Like that. But otherwise, there's only one answer. In this second chapter, the correct answers to these questions, the answers given by the self-realized souls, will be recounted. But first we will consider this question. Who are the self-realized souls? The souls who have no relation to material place, time, senses, and body, and who are instead situated in their original spiritual nature, are self-realized souls. In the book Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6, which contains the essential teachings of the Vedanta, the pure self-realized soul is described in these words: Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena vivastiti. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. It's very important, this definition, right? Because it's not just after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle bodies. It has to be the permanent situation, right? Madhvacharya makes that point. Until you develop a relationship with the Lord, it's not permanent. Right, you're liberated, but it's not permanent. When you develop prema, it's permanent. But until then, you can be spiritual, but not permanent. Right? Therefore, we see the Maya bodies, impersonalists, all that, they will fall down. There's no question. It's guaranteed. Right? But for Vaishnavas, they can fall from the Uttama platform before prema. Generally, it doesn't happen, but one technically could. But once coming to prema, then we see, then the statements there, once you've come to that, you won't fall from that. So, because then it's permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So yes. Liberation means prema.
Yes. But the point is it's giving just the exact definition. Because if you say prema, then what's prema, what's this and that? Because you're discussing liberation. So here you're saying the permanent situation. Now here it says, of the form of the living entity after he gives up the change of gross and subtle bodies. So now, to have that permanent situation of prema, there must be a form. Because the other is that if you're saying there's no form, that also can't be liberation. Because otherwise, how are you going to function in a relationship with the Supreme with no form? If he has no form and you have no form, how do you interact? Right, you can't even say hi. Right, you know, it's just there's nothing to work with. Does that make sense?
It's inconceivable. We can't understand how two formless entities can interact as we're conditioned.
But the problem is that by definition, then two formless entities wouldn't be two formless entities. They'd be one entity. So they can't act. You can't even pat yourself on the back. You know, because there is no hand to do that. So it's not possible. You know, there is no individuality, and if there's no individuality, there's no identity. And if there's no identity, you know, it means individual identity, then you can't have interaction. If there's no interaction, there won't be ananda.
But Brahman is ananda, so I must be able to experience the ananda, no?
The point is how is it ananda but ananda is an experience of a situation. So right there, that already creates two. There's a situation, and then there's experience of the situation. That means, but the two separate things, how do the two combine? That means by some activity has to bring the two together. So if there's experience, that means energy. Because happiness means it's an energy. Right? So then the problem is then, what is the activity of eternity that you then experience this ananda? Is this you're saying your experience, but what you experience with? Here we experience it with the mind. And you can tell it's being experienced by the senses. But how is it there? Just by saying, oh, it's inconceivable. But the point is it can't be defined. So if we're saying, well, it's beyond that, how do you know what you're describing is actually correct? Because you're doing it, you're still trying to conceive of it with the mind. You know what I'm saying? So if you're saying, yes, it's beyond the mind, but the problem is you're not beyond the mind. So better to let those who are beyond the mind, let them define it. And since we see in Shastra that the same Shastras that define Brahman as nirguna also defines it as saguna, or defines as without form, also with form. So that means, yes, from our perspective, with our limited senses, I mean, yeah, the limitation of the senses and mind, Therefore, we can only understand God as not having any of these qualities. But with the mundane, we can't actually understand how he does, because that's what's beyond. Just say there's nothing beyond, and then somehow or another we'll experience with what? Because there's nothing to experience it with. You know, that's the whole problem.
But isn't it described that the bliss of Brahman is millions of times greater than...
But the bliss of Brahman, what they're talking about, is the bliss of not... I mean, two aspects. What the Mayavadis are interested in, the bliss of not being in the material world. You know, it's just like, let us just use a more mundane example. Let us say, just very random here. You happen to be outside, and it happens to be 41 degrees, you know. We're not talking about any particular situation. Right? And it's hot, and it's sweaty. And then you go inside to somebody's house, and they have on the AC, right? And they're fanatics, and they have it set at 17. Okay? Now, you sit down in the chair there, and you go, wow, this is nice. Right? And it'll be nice for a while. So what it is happiness means the difference between the situation and, you know, what it is that you're trying to obtain. So as long as there's a distance, you feel it. As you start to cool down, the distance between what you want and what you are becomes smaller and smaller until you become 17 degrees. Right? Then at that point, there is no Ananda. So for the Mayavadis, that's why they'll fall, because their Ananda is simply the Ananda of not being in the material world.
But when they first come in the house, they have to experience that difference. So there, it seems like...
Yes, but once they've experienced it, then they get bored.
So it seems like they're still maintaining individuality.
Yes, that's the whole point. They maintain individuality. That's the point. Otherwise, if you're not an individual, how do you know you'll experience it?
So what's the meaning of merging in Brahman?
It means that the living entity is floating around with any growth of subtle bodies, just in his consciousness, and he thinks, wow, this is great. Until after, you know, how long do you experience, you know, his peace? You know, let's just say you go out into the forest, you know, been driving all day, you go out there, get out of your car, walk out and walk around, oh, this is great. How long before you start to do something? Right? Give yourself 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
But
you understand? So that means you'll stay in the Brahman for 5 or 10 minutes of Brahman's time. So one breath of Mahavishnu is 3/4 of a second. So 3/4 of a second, you know, give that, add that up, how many breaths it'll be to get 5 minutes. And then you'll be back.
So why can't they relate to the other souls that are in the mind?
Because there's nothing to relate with. There is no mind. There is no senses. There is no, like that. They don't have anything. So there's nothing to relate to. So that's why it's an illusion that's what they're going to get out of it. You know what I'm saying? It's that way with anything. It's really cold, you get in, sit across the fire, you know, get out there and everything like that, or you're really hungry and then you eat and then you stop. Because as the distance between your pain and what you call getting rid of that pain, which is pleasure, then it's there, because they're only talking about mundane pleasure, because their pleasure is getting rid of material pain. All it is instead of getting rid of the pain of, you know, working, you know, now it's the weekend, or, you know, a funny situation, or being hungry, or being tired, is they're just talking about the total material experience, getting rid of that. That's why that happiness is much greater than any of the one from here. So you take all of that together, you're getting rid of all of that. So naturally it'll be like that. It'll be great, but it's only for a moment. And after that, those few moments, then you want to do something. And they don't know spiritual activity, because that's very much part of the philosophy. No material activity means, spiritual means no activity, no feelings, no emotions, no that. So right there, that means also no understanding what Brahmananda is. And so then
How many of these Mayavadis actually make it to Brahman?
I would say probably, I would give it, you know, 0.000, keep going, and then, because only technically a Brahmavadi can make it to Brahman. Because a Brahmavadi meaning he's not offensive to the form of the Lord. Right? In other words, if he's an impersonalist, but he's not offensive to the Lord's form, he also considers the form of the Lord as Brahman, he could get merged in Brahman. But if he thinks that the form of the Lord is also temporary or an illusion, then basically, you know, I mean, there's, you know, some varieties of hells you can attend, but he's never going to get to Brahman. So even if the point is Mayavadis aren't even real impersonalists. Because that's where the thing, Mayavadi, it's Maya. That's the whole thing. While Brahmavadi, no, it's all Brahman. They'll say they're Brahmavadis, but they're not actual. Because why is it that the whole world I can see Brahman, but I can't see in the temple the deity? That's illusion. That's a bias. Right? Like that. Somehow or another, everybody's Brahman. They refer to each other as Narayan, but then Narayan can't be Narayan. You know? That's just bogus. So it's hellish intelligence. So they will never get to Brahman.
So what happens? They become Mayavadis birth after birth?
Yeah, and then when they get frustrated with that, then they go revert back to the original, and then they become Buddhists. And when they get tired of that, then they become gross materialists. They become karmis again. So that's the cycle. Karma, gyan, Buddhist. Karma, gyan, Buddhist. Because that's, what's it?
Right.
But what's that, the Gita Shloka?
Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha.
Yeah, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So Raga is karma. Bhaya is the impersonal, or fear, you know, fear of that relationship. And then Krodha is anger after that. That's why you see is that the idea of the Buddhism, it's nice, but it can't really be followed by the conditioned soul. So it always turns into anger. Buddhism wasn't even remained Buddha's pure Buddhism during the life of Buddha. It had already transformed like that. So all this other rituals, because there's no temple, there's no ritual. There's nothing. All you have, you know, you go out begging, and you sit and contemplate, meditate, discuss just how everything's Brahman, and just keep moving. You know, you walk in the morning, find some place, sit, go out and go out begging, sit down, rest, maybe do some more walking. If it's there, if not, spend that night. Next morning, walk again. That's Buddhism. That's real Buddhism. That's not, nobody practices that. So it's just not even. So therefore, it's the element is that of anger. You're angry that the karma doesn't work and the gyan doesn't work. So therefore, nothing.
Maharaj, what is the best help that we can do for impersonalists so that they come to this philosophy?
Depends on the mind body. Yeah, prasad. Generally, they always eat prasad. Just don't talk too much about it. Right? If you just give them prasad, then they don't think how, yes, you know, the supreme mode of goodness, you know, there's a ritual, and then this is, but do I have a fire form? You just give them prasad. Like that.
Impersonalists don't listen also, actually.
That's what I say, give them prasad. They don't have the capacity to listen. So, you know, Mayavadis, crazy people, you know, kids, people who have no focus or attention, you know, just give them prasad. Like that. Maybe some kirtan, you know, they can hear kirtan, and that's also nice. Play in the background so they don't really focus on it.
And there's that one pastime when Mayavadi was arguing with Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was just listening to him. He was going on at length, and then afterwards the Mayavadi left, and then one disciple asked Prabhupada, how come you just, you know, didn't smash him? Why did you just listen? He says, oh, did you hear how many times he said Krishna during that conversation?
I've seen like a few people when they chant also, like chant one round impersonalists, but it is still quite offensive.
The point is it's they'll use anything to in their process of naishkarmya. So it's not a problem. You go to Guru Vayu where they chant Hare Krishna for 3 hours when they're on the elephant session. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they only chant Hare Krishna. The kirtan is Hare Krishna. And it's been like that. Shankaracharya established it that way. So they chant Hare Krishna for 3 hours every night. Right? That's the big one. Then there's, I heard that there's 5 of them during the day. So there'll be 4 other short ones. So they're doing, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours of kirtan a day. Shankaracharya's trick. They don't do that at any other temple. Just there. They're all involved in the worship and everything. It's all done with devotion and like that. But it's his trick. It's out of the way. It wasn't the main seat of the Mahavira. Go there for some relief.
But what is the plan of having the multiple systems like this, like multiple philosophies?
What is the plan for having all these? What do you mean by plan? Right?
Because there is so many distractions. I mean, if somebody wants to know the absolute truth, still there is so many distractions. Some get tossed away from the truth. Everyone.
No, it's because people want to be distracted from the truth. That's why then there's distractions.
So the root cause is people want to be away from the absolute truth. That's why more philosophies came.
How does the jiva come to the material world?
Rebellious. Became rebel against the law.
Okay. And so then in the rebellious jiva's concept, who's God? Okay, so is that the Dvaita philosophy? Right? So, all the philosophies of the material world are all Advaita. It's just a matter of if what elements are mixed, it's mixed with, what form it takes. Everything is. There's pure Vaishnavism, and then there's Advaita. That's all you have.
I just read yesterday, maybe you heard about the last word, where Krishna was speaking to Lord Shiva and saying, I don't want all these people bothering me, so preach your philosophy to keep them away from me, so we'll have like a gate here, and we'll only let in the pure bhakti.
Means it's because then, that's why you see is that being the Sambandha Acharya, he's always distinguishing between what's actual devotional service and what's not. What's the proper rituals, what's not. What's the accepted, authorized, and what's not. So he shows that how the path through which the consciousness goes. So,
talking about Shankaracharya?
Means you're talking about Shankaracharya?
Yeah.
Because you said Hari Bhakti Vilas.
And I'm not sure where I read it. Lord Shiva, Lord Krishna speaking to Lord Shiva and saying, this is,
okay, so that's you're supposed to do that. So then you're taking these people who are using the Vedas and supposedly worshipping him and then not worshipping him, just using for sense gratification. So then you take them away to the Buddhism. Then from Buddhism now, they're also not bothering him, you know, like that. So in other, you just have so many ways that people can get distracted so that they don't go near. You know? So then the nice thing about the Maya bodies is they don't go into the temples. You know, the true Maya body won't go into the temple.
So it sounds like if they weren't Maya bodies, they would be a bigger disturbance in a sense, because they would contaminate pure bhakti.
The point is that there's a system for establishing pure devotional service, and by doing that, then one pleases the Lord, one comes near the Lord. But otherwise, then there's always something else to distract you, something else to keep you busy. So the Vedic system is designed to keep everybody busy. Because otherwise, then who knows what trouble they'll make. You know, it's just like, let us say like this. You have a economic system, that's based not on how to improve the quality of things, but how those who are clever can make the maximum profit. So that means that has to be at the expense of others. Right? It means the Vedic is that everybody can prosper because you're bringing more and more things of value into the system, so that means more and more people can have it. And as you go, there's as the population expands, there's more and more people to create these materials. Well, in the modern, it's not based necessarily off that. It's rooted in that, but it's more off of making the profit rather than sharing prosperity. So then, therefore, you're going to have at any one time somebody's making profit, someone else is losing. But if you balance it just perfectly, then basically it's moving along. And even though you lose, at some point you get something. And in this way, everybody's losing, but everybody's getting. So then it can kind of survive. But when you have it gets a little out of hand, so that some are making even more money, and so that means you have more people losing money. Then, because you have a culture that's aimed at, you know, if you have money, you'll be happy, then you have to create other aspects of happiness for those who don't have money. And therefore, then the governments and all that, they push sports and all these other kind of big things that will attract people's attention. Because at least for that much time, they're not making trouble. Because in other words, if I constantly think about my bad situation, I can really get some really bad plans. But if it's constantly being broken by all these other activities, then you create less trouble. Right? So in the material world, if they were just here and bored, then that would be a lot of trouble. But if you keep them busy with all this material, you know, phantasmagoria, then they bother less. Make sense?
But it seems a contradiction in the sense that my bodies, their philosophy is so detrimental to bhakti, and they become a disturbance for innocent people who may want bhakti.
But that's why there's preaching. But the point is if people want to know, then they'll come in contact with the bona fide. It's just a matter of if they want to know or not. That's all. It's just people get what they want.
Is it always a question of that? Or I just live on the wrong street next to that yoga center?
Yeah, but why do you live on that street? It wasn't just suddenly there was a little puff of smoke and there you were. And as soon as you go, wow, what's this? And you turn around, then suddenly two adults go, oh, our baby, you know, like that. He'd been waiting so long, finally the puff of smoke came, like that. And then it's like, oh, okay, you know, it's just like, the whole thing is it's based on your previous karma, that's where you're there. This lifetime is simply a continuance of last. As your Prabhupada said, you don't have to go out all these people to figure out what you were in last lifetimes. You just observe what is important to you, what you value of this life. Because that's all. You simply continue doing the same stuff. In other words, the person has their plans, right? The young man has his plans, he does all the thing, he goes for it, works very hard, and then when he gets in his 50s, he figures out the plans don't work. Right? So now, then, naturally that triggers the midlife crisis, right? So now, and interesting to note, the midlife crisis at that age would necessitate that, in theory, you should live to 100, right? You know, then it's midlife crisis, you know.
It's my midlife crisis getting younger.
Yeah. At the end of Kali Yuga, they'll hit midlife crisis at 10. Right? Because they'll all be a father at 6, right?
There's a new phenomenon called the quarter-life crisis. There's
quarter-life crisis.
Books written about it.
Quarter-life crisis, because things move so fast, you figure out, you know, by the time you hit 30, that it's not going to work, right? You know. So now that midlife crisis is going to make a change. You're going to have to change something, because whatever your plans were, it didn't work. So now you have. You can either go with the Vedic concept of what midlife crisis is for, or the modern concept. So the Vedic concept is called Vanaprastha. Is that, okay, been there, done that, material life doesn't work, none of it works, and so therefore now what things are essential, you know, to my, you know, sadhana, the bhajan, Vaishnava association, I do that and leave all the rest. Right? And so then that goes on, and because then the essence of that is Krishna, and at the end of life, then one goes back to Godhead. The modern is then, okay, that didn't work, so either you come up with a new plan, or from amongst all your so many plans, you pick a few essentials and then really focus on those. That's what you carry into your next life. Right? And then because the intelligence, you know, can work out things, and you take those essence, you expand them again, and now you have your plan. And then, like that. Does that make sense?
One could argue then, say, well, we actually shouldn't preach against the Mayavadis because they serve a purpose.
No, they serve a purpose amongst themselves, but those who, by hearing preaching against the Mayavadis, will take up Krishna consciousness, then they're the ones to benefit. We're not preaching against Mayavadis that we're thinking that the Mayavadi himself will get a benefit. We're preaching for the innocent. Right? Those who are against atheistic, who are against, we avoid them. You know, it's not like we're making arrangements to go, you know, Sringeri Math or something like that and have a program. You know, we don't do that. But for those who are innocent, we preach to them. And then they can change. You know, so it's just the standard, you know, the madhyama. Avoid the, you know, those who are not interested and those who are possibilities. Because the whole point is the whole material world is technically a dvaitabhava. Because the living entity thinks I'm God, that's a dvaitabhava. It's just they have different forms of it. So Tatvivek in the first part is only describing the various kinds of dvaitabhava. You're going to have a dvaitabhava that looks more like karma, a dvaitabhava that looks more like jnana. You have a, you know, the karma can be that you accept the soul or not. You know, so there's reincarnation or not. Also the jnana can be there's reincarnation or not. Then in concept of a supreme, there can be an impersonal supreme, you know, that you just directly say is impersonal, or you can have forms that you say ultimately are impersonal, like that. And then of forms, then, you know, is the form of Maya, form of Shiva, form of demigods, you know, or monotheistic. But ultimately, you all say it's all impersonal. So that's basically the material philosophies and religions in a nutshell. Oh, you could also take nature as a form. Right? We missed something. Yeah? Okay.
Christianity, God the Father, some concept of...
Yeah, as I'm saying, it is some concept, but what does this Father look like?
Long hair, long gray hair. Old man.
Sure. But ultimately they'll say he has no form. You say, what form does he have? They'll paint like that, but then there's no face. Right? Like that. Well, Michelangelo has a face. But ultimately then there is no form. And even if there's talking about a form, then you'd be good, what will you get? What's the ultimate goal? To be good, you go to heaven. And then in heaven, what's your relationship with God? No one talks about that. You'll hang out with your family, and, you know, some religions, I think they allow your dog to come. So, you know, you can come be there and hang out.
So if you don't like your family and you become a devotee, so you don't have to worry about them being with you when you go back to God.
Right. See? Win-win. No. Yeah. No, but that this is what this section is about. This section is about what is the actual perceptive of the living entities in the spiritual world. Right? So we're first defining that liberated means permanent situation of the form of the living entity. Right? After giving up the gross and subtle material bodies. Yes.
On the point that every philosophy is ultimately Advaita, I've heard one description stating that there's two kinds of atheism. One is psychological atheism, the other is philosophical atheism. So philosophical means you actually profess that there is no God. And then psychological is the notion that I am the center of creation, is that ultimately is it, yeah. Even though it's not explicit,
yeah, yeah. Okay. That not I to consider myself profess, to be because they could say that there's a God and there's yeah. a person. And much of the time is that for your common person, they'll accept God has a form, you know, but I mean that he's a person, so what is that? They don't know. Mm-hmm. But the guys that sit around and think about it, because they're doing it with their material, mm-hmm. you know, intelligence and mind, they can't conceive of it because it's impossible, so then they'll say it doesn't happen mm-hmm. because of the psychological, mm-hmm. you know, so then, because they can't perceive it. So then, them being the center of everything, if I can't perceive it, then he doesn't have. Yes. Therefore, then I profess the philosophy. Because your common person, they don't really have a problem that God is a person, and you know we're people, and there's a spiritual body. Because they're already taking that what their religion is talking about is spiritual, not heavenly. Because mm-hmm. they can't tell the difference between the spiritual world and the heavenly world. That's the difficulty. Because the problems that they're having, it's not that they want it, there's two illusions that the living entity has when coming to the material world. Ananda Brahma and Vaikuntha Brahma. He thinks that Vaikuntha Brahma is the world's eternal, and Ananda Brahma is full of happiness. So these two illusions are the thing. So he's looking for that eternal situation of happiness. So the karmi will think it's heaven. Mm-hmm. The jnani will think it's liberation. The devotee knows it's devotion. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's the... So, but that's always what they're trying to solve, those two. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. Because the living entity is Satchit Ananda. Mm-hmm. Right? So Sat is eternal. Ananda is bliss. And then chit, so there's a process that you can work to, you know, therefore have eternal happiness. It's just that now they'll interpret that. These are all part of the eternal, the natural understanding of the living entities. Then they'll apply that into their situation. So it'll take on the particular flavor. Yes?
If the chit is some sort of element that the illusion of I'm the doer,
that's more your sat. It's just you are doing. In other words, you have means sat and ananda are the situation and what you want to gain from the situation. Chit means there the endeavor, the knowledge and endeavor that's applied to the situation to get that result. Right? So in other words, sat is the masculine position. Ananda is the feminine position. But now you have to bring the masculine and feminine position together, but in an appropriate way. So that's why it can't be speculative. It has to be according to... It means this particular sat, you want this particular chit, there's a way that they... I mean, Ananda, they have to be brought together in a particular way. So that knowledge of that and that endeavor, that's chit. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why everybody can relate that there's some process. Even if you say, no, there's no process. You know, you don't need anything. You just do it on your own. Still, you're going to on your own. The process is that you yourself are going to do it yourself. There's no help. You know, you just sit down and meditate or just, you know, think about or just like that. But still, that's a process. Just they made it very, very extremely simple. But so the idea is that result comes from process. That's just everybody knows that. It's just known. The difficulty is that a lot. It's not necessarily understood what processes are necessary to get what results. That's the weakness. So, in other words, for the situation you one has, one wants the impossible. Right? But it's you only get a result from the situation you're in. You can't get a result from a situation that you don't have. Right? Does that make sense? No. So then being, you know, being, oh, I'll, you know, oh, but you had so many plans. You had, no, I'm being realistic now. All it is that you had plans to do with the situation that didn't match. Not that they couldn't match, but you never thought them out to the point where they did match. You know, well, to do what I wanted to do, you needed this, you needed that, and I don't have that, so let's be realistic, so I start with this. But that means he just didn't have the plan. So now he's starting with that, and that, but now, in doing that, his romantic concept of what his goal could be, he's given up. So he's just taking what little he has and functioning with that, and it remains little. Right? But the point was is, you know, other kids go into their garage and end up as billionaires. They also started with even possibly less little than the little that this now, you know, really, how you say, reasonable adult is working with. Because they had a plan all the way through. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is how to combine the balance of realisticness with romantic. What it is that could happen with what you're starting with. In other words, how to convert what I have into what that is there. Does that make sense? But it should be that what you want is something that is within the sphere of actually your duties. Like that. And then you have to get it by following the natural laws that govern that particular process. And then it's possible. Right? But it's just a matter of whether you have the karma. You'll get as far as you have the karma. But if you stick to it, you know, do it over thousands of lifetimes, then you can get pretty good.
Married in the same manner, somebody who wants to have love of God, he can get.
You can get it because it's the desire. The important thing is the desire. Then from you start from the situation you're in. Right? But it's the desire. So that's why when someone gives up the romantic concepts or their ideals or like that, that's not actually beneficial. It's being more realistic how to apply the ideals. Not that the ideals can't be applied. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, yes, you know, be truthful, do something beneficial for people. And so, okay, then who gives the most benefit for the people? And so the government gives the most benefit for the people. So, you know, I'll get involved. You know, I got to pass a degree on, you know, law and, you know, so clever and that. And I'll help with campaigns. We'll get someone into office, you know, that I feel, you know, really can support. And their platforms are really good and the people will be benefited. Great. So then you go into the big city, then you're there, and then you take part in all that, then you find out that this is not working so good, and it's actually each candidate is just as bad as the other. It's just all politics. You know, you call them politicians, there's a reason you call them politicians. You know, like that, isn't it? You know, if they were gentlemen, you call them gentlemen. No, you call them politicians. Gentleman's another entity, right? You know, just like there's a sports person because he does sports. Now if he has good qualities also, you know, then you'll say then that's your ideal sportsman, you know, at least. But I even think that concept is fading, you know, like that, because the point is the real gentleman is like there, he scored the goal or something like that, he, you know, just kind of pleasantly, you know, they want to see him, you know, rip off his shirt, slide on the grass, be picked up and be in total ecstasy like an idiot, and then they can go yes, you know. Because it said, I think it's sure that the Niti Shastra, I think, talks about it. I think, or maybe, no, I think it's, maybe it's Mahabharata. It's from Niti. Is that the first class man, when some very great, good thing happens, then it's just a slight smile. Like, okay, huh? Mahabharata. You know, and your third class man, and he's like, you know, yeah, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. Like that. So it's just a matter of the culture. So something happened to Yudhishthira, you just get a slight smile, you know. But Duryodhana, then when things went wrong, then, you know, and everybody left, and then he'd be punching the air and, you know, doing this whole trippy thing and like that. So but people want to see the third class. Because first class, you know, it's not, you know, how you say? We sadly, we must say Britain's era is over, right? You know, so that's
same entertainment value.
Yeah. But it's hard to say whose turn it is, right? You know. So. Okay.
I would imagine that those rules don't apply in kirtan, then ecstasy is the same thing.
Yeah, no, but the point is it doesn't matter in kirtan, as long as you don't bother anybody. But, you know, it's just the kirtan doesn't matter, because even if there is some discrepancy, by being that enthusiastic in kirtan, it will be, you'll get purified, and it will be, it will refine naturally.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But because it's not just the form, because people can put as much attitude into dancing nicely, you know, like that. Is that, you know, like that. So the idea is that if the desire is good, then that must always be maintained. That's the main thing. But then you have to be realistic and understanding what situation you're in and what is that goal that you're trying to get to, and then trying to match it from there. Right? In other words, what's happening is the guy, as we were saying, the politician, then he goes into the political field, then he finds out it's not as ideal as he wanted. Now he could give it all up and drop his idealism and become very despondent, and, you know, all kinds of, the West has varieties of nice paths you can take, you know, like that. And so, does that make sense? You know, you can be a drunkard, you could be a revolutionary, you know. I mean, it's not so popular now, but before, you know, back in the 30s, and get into opium. You know, there's varieties of things you could do like that. You know, just, you know, become a real mudah, just go to work, get your money, go home, you know, eat, go to sleep, like this, like that. So, variety of things. But the point is what was the ideal? The ideal was to do what I, in my situation, can do for people. So therefore, now we have to look at, with me, with my resources, what could I do to do that? So then now he's a lawyer, so therefore he can do a lot of pro bono work in some area of town that doesn't have the facilities to, you know, get legal support. And that's what he can do. He's a lawyer. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, take part in the local things, and that way help whatever he can. So that's what he can do. So he can maintain the ideal, but he just has to be realistic where he applies it. He doesn't have that kind of power. Does that make sense? So you have to be realistic to just see where to keep it. Because the idea is that if you get rid of that idealism, then what's your drive? And if there's no drive, then life gets boring. And when life gets boring, everybody else gets bored with your life. Right? And therefore, then, you know, everybody's, you know, the son's off with his friends, the daughter's off with, you know, her friends doing whatever they're doing, or even if you're talking to them, they're texting, you know, like that, you know. You know, wife's off with her friends down at the spa, so, you know, and you're alone. Right? Why? Yeah, because you're boring. Why? Because you don't have any ideals, you don't have any desires, trying to, you know, there's nothing for rasa. You're just functioning in Shankarshan, you're just existing. Like that. So all it is one's not realistically applying, one's not intelligently applying. One could say, no, I'm intelligent, but it's an emotional reaction rather than an intelligent reaction. Does that make sense? So in devotional service, it's the same. It means the origin of this concept comes in devotional service. If you want to please Krishna and keep that in mind, then whatever your situation, you continue. It's not that I'm so sinful, I'm so fallen, therefore I can't desire pure devotional service. I'm not qualified. No, that's the only qualification you have. Right? Everything else is not good. So the point is you still desire it. And if you keep that up, then you'll start seeing, okay, I could improve this too. That will give better support. Right? Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
When he is freed from material existence, the soul is situated in his real original nature. Right? Then he is self-realized. Right? So that's actual self-realization. So what the Brahmavadis get, we will call self-realization, but it's only partial self-realization. Because if you only know, let's say, okay, you know, you figured out, okay, I'm George. So is he self-realized? You could say, okay, but George, who are his parents? Where does he live? What's his background? You understand? You have to know the whole package. Then you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have somebody who, they're comfortable in whatever social system that they are. They're comfortable in their clothes. They're comfortable in their, I mean, even some they say, they're just comfortable in their skin. Right? They're not disturbed by others that someone else has something better, or someone else is more clever. And whoever they are, they're just comfortable. Does that make sense? So then you'll say, that's something ideal. So just to know I'm Brahman, great, that's a first step, that's better than all the other idiots. But the point is, what is this Brahman? So therefore, says what he's situated as the original nature, which is defined before, such a permanent situation, the form of the living entity, that's then what we're describing as original. Here someone may protest, oh, only the self-realized soul will give the correct answers to our three questions. Here someone may protest. The living entity in the material world has a body, senses, and reasoning power. If he renounces material existence, then what will happen to his body, senses, and reasoning power? How will he be able to give the correct answers to your questions? Right? Someone may say that. Yeah. At the same time as then the person to say that is that when they merge in Brahman, then the problem is they don't have any reasoning power. So how do they know that they're Brahmananda? How do they know they're happy? Right? Because you have to be smart enough to know you're happy. Right. The answer to this protest is that the soul is like spiritual knowledge personified. The soul has spiritual knowledge as one of its natural features. Right? So it's eternity personified, knowledge personified, Ananda personified. But the personified element's the important aspect to keep there. The soul has not only spiritual knowledge of itself, the soul also has is also filled with light, so that with the light of its knowledge it can illuminate the features of other things also, right? Because that's how it's working in the material world, is that the chit potency of the living entity is what's illuminating what you see around you. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's what it is. The chit is reflected off the intelligence, the mirror of the mind, onto the sense object. Right? And so that light of that, therefore you can see it. And then that's reflected back onto the mirror, and then you're looking at the mirror. You know what I'm saying? So that's called real. Now, if there's a mirror reflecting what's within that mirror, that's called a reflection here. But if you're talking about the what you first see with the reflection, that's called real. Right? So this is where that our concept of reflectionism comes from. Because that's actually how it's functioning. But that's real. So to say it's reflect, but they use reflectionism to say it's not real, it's not actually there. No, it is actually there. Right? This means that the soul has power to see, hear, smell, and taste. The soul has knowledge as part of its nature. Right? So it has that power, but we have to understand is unless the supreme power has arranged it and he's seeing first, we can't see. But he does have the power to see by God's grace. When it falls into the material world, the soul is imprisoned within a series of material coverings. To enable him to interact with the material world, the spirit soul is given a second set of senses, material senses. Right? Because you have your natural spiritual mind, intelligence, ego, senses. But one's covered. So the mind, intelligence, false ego of that covering is what you use. Right? So that's why somebody says, oh, but then if you get rid of this, then you'll have nothing. What do you use there? Well, you have a mind there. And no, of course, no. Then you're just, all you're getting rid of is the covering that you're using. Right? Just like, let's say, you put on a mask. Right? And then there's holes in the mask where the eyes and the mask are. So you're seeing through the holes in the mask. But then you can say, if I remove the mask, then there'll be nothing. No, then you'll have your regular face and regular eyes. Right? Because it's only through the one that you're actually the other one's working. It's only through the potency of the spiritual that the material is working. The material is imperfect. We identify with it. That's why then our observations are imperfect. Does that make sense? Yeah. In this way, the soul sees with material eyes, hears with material ears, smells with a material nose, tastes with the material tongue, and experiences touch with material skin, with material birth. Right? Yes. His original spiritual senses are now deprived of their powers. The soul now uses the powers of this second set of senses. Right? Because the spiritual is going to function with spirit, not with matter. Also, the conclusions the soul draws are now drawn with the aid of material reasoning. All of this is a great calamity for the spirit soul, whose natural condition is to be full of knowledge. So you're using material reasoning, so it's limited within the material. Now, if perfection was working out what works nicely in the material world, then the soul would have worked that out a long time ago. Right? That would have. That, how long does it take? Right? You know, means you're doing something now. There's someone who can tell you what you actually should be doing. And then if you do it, you say, wow, this works. Where has this been my whole life? Right? But unfortunately, you know, but then there's something else that other person's doing that someone else has to tell him. So the knowledge is there, how to make the material world work. The problem is that because of conditioning and attachments, people don't want to follow it, right? And you also have, the problem is the soul being eternal. There's things, problems there. The point is, you know, you go out and you buy yourself something to eat. You know, do you think it'll last forever? You have a problem when you come to the last bite? If you do, you go get another one. Right? Isn't it? So like that, when the body comes to an end, it's not a problem. You get another one. Right? And you keep getting another one until you decide, you know, you've had enough. Right? So that's the idea is that there's not a problem. You're dealing with something temporary. Of course it's going to be temporary. The problem is the soul thinks eternal. So then that problem comes as I'm dealing with temporary, but I want eternal. You can't get eternal from temporary. Right? So that's the difficulty that he has. That's why there's problem to figure it out. You want to be happy. Happy is positive, but all you're doing is removing the negative. In this material world, there is no such thing as positive. It's only removing the negative. Right? You know, think, no, I'll go on the vacation, it'll be so nice, that's positive. Here's just ordinary. No, here is the negative. By going to vacation, you remove the negative, which is the day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. But when it's been removed, then you get bored in that place and you want to go back to the other thing. Right? So now you remove boredom by doing something, going back to work. You know, and then you're great, yeah, back to work, yeah, everything like that. And then you get tired of work, well, it's time for a vacation. You know, so all it is those who are smart work it out how much, in a particular job, how much you can handle before you can't handle it anymore. Right? In other words, the ratio between your endeavor and the results that you get is still good enough that it's profitable. When it drops too much, vacation time. Right? And then you come back and then, you know, the two are close and you get good profit. You know, balance that, but how much time is vacation, how much time is production, so that you don't, you understand? You just work all those out and that's profit. Right? So you balance that, then it works. But that's all you're doing. There is no positive. It's just removing negative. But because the soul identifies with positive, through the material senses, they identify this and material reasoning, that this is...
positive.
Yes, positive. Yes. Somehow we just have a flash of Ryan Seacrest. Okay. When the soul becomes self-realized, his original nature is revived. Then he can again perform all these activities with his original spiritual senses. Not that you have to gain them, it's already inherently there. It's just their manifestation. So according to Yarasa, they manifest, right? It doesn't say that, you know, one enters a body or the body's there and then it's like that. It's just, does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Even when they read Rama Jyoti, those senses still.
It's still just inside, but now it's that you're not manifesting the spiritual, but you're not manifesting the material, so that gets really boring. So that's why we're saying, when in a form, the permanent situation, the form of the living entity, then he's manifesting the spiritual senses, that he can stay at. That's actual liberation. But otherwise, then it's just the senses aren't being manifested.
At that stage, the person in the restroom, what is covering?
The Purusha Bhava. That's what keeps him in that position. Because that's what has to be given up, the Purusha Bhava. That I'm the enjoyer. Because that's what gets us here. Is we see with our spiritual senses, the spiritual energy, but we think it's something to enjoy. Right? So then, therefore, since spiritual energy is conscious, it's not going to appreciate that. You know, in other words, everything becomes like, you know, how you say, permanent voyeurism. You know, you're just trying to watch and enjoy everything. So that's not appreciated. So the conscious energy will be upset with that Purusha Bhava. But the unconscious energy, you know, who cares? You know, you can stare at the rock all day, you know, and it's not going to, you know, it's not going to tell you what you're looking at. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Then his reason power is again his original spiritual reasoning power, right? Because the sense of being, the process of reasoning, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, is the same. Because if we're talking the material is a reflection, the mechanics are the same. You have spiritual senses by which you bring in, then according to your particular, some, you know, your particular, how you say, position, you'll decide what things you can get from this. Right? Now, okay, in this situation, we could do this for Krishna. Right? Mother, in the same situation, Mother Yashoda sees one thing, the cowherd boys see another, the gopis see another. Does that make sense? Right? Means, let's say we go into Nanda Bhavan. Okay? So, Mother Yashoda sees, here's a house in which I can do all kinds of things too. Here's a situation in which I can do all varieties of service for Krishna as a parent. The cowherd boys will see this is where you can hang out with Krishna and have some fun, but, you know, don't get too rambunctious, otherwise Mother Yashoda will give you a look. Right? And the gopis, it's at, you know, certain parts of the house we can use, we can do things for Krishna, and if we get the opportunity, we can get to other parts of the house where the cowherd boys and the adults aren't, so therefore then we can interact with Krishna. Does that make sense? So, in other words, according to their particular rasa, they're interpreting the situation. They reduce it down to what will work in that. Then they you know, do the same thing. What are the various ways that we could use this to please Krishna? Right? And then according to their identity, they'll choose. It's the same process. But everything's pure because you're using spiritual senses with the spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, spiritual identity, right? And therefore it will be applied as spiritual activity. In the material world, the same process, but it won't be spiritual. Right? So. In that liberated condition with his original spiritual reasoning power, the soul can give the correct answers to our questions. With his own spiritual power, the soul can give the answers. These answers the soul gives are free from all of matter's limitations and defects. The answer a self-realized soul residing in India gives a self-realized soul residing in the northern countries will also give. Oh, I see. I suppose I guess. Yeah. The answer a self-realized soul residing in India gives, a self-realized soul residing in the northern countries will also give. A soul living in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha will also give the same answer. Right? So in other words, it's not the situation. It's the consciousness. So the self-realized soul, no matter where they are, will give the same thing. But why he gives these points is that the culture, the values, the systems, the particular types of worship, rituals, food, dress, cultural interactions are different between the living entity that's living in South India and the living entity living in North India, or living in India or living in the West, or living in the material world and living in the spiritual world. Why? Because that variety is there. That's coming from the mundane. But on the transcendental platform, they'll all give the same answers. There'll be variety in how they express it, but the answer will be the same. Right? Does that make sense? If I go to Vaikuntha and let's say, who is God? What are they going to say? Right? Narayan is God. Right? Vishnu is God. So that means they're Vaishnavas. So we go to Dwarka. right? Means you. Now let's take. We're taking someone from Dwarka that's come here to preach. Who are they going to say is God? Again, Vishnu. And you know the Goswamis are coming from Vrindavan. When they're preaching here, who's God? Vishnu, right? Does that make sense? So there's only one answer. Now, what aspect or flavor of God? That's where the difference is. But their answer is the fundamental answer is exactly the same. It's the detail where the difference. The principles are all the same. The spiritual world's the same principles. Detail is simply what particular flavor. You know, so you say, how are you going to nourish your body? You know, those who understand are going to say, food. Right? Now, what food? That'll be different according to the taste. Right? Mm-hmm. Means you go to any culture, they have grains, they have dairy products, they have vegetables, right? Right? They have dal, all the different varieties of things. They have sweeteners. Right? Every culture has that. It's just not according to the modes how they apply those things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like that. And why not? The pure liberated souls did not give answers that come from a great variety of mixtures in the material modes. That is why their answers are not different from each other. Right? In other words, it's coming from the same natural spiritual source of the jiva itself, not coming from the material senses. That's the thing. Okay, so I'll end here. So does that mean we're doing the Sikshamrita this evening, or we're doing this evening and then doing the
Sikshamrita this evening?
This evening, okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
yeah.
Jai Nityai Gaurudakini.